Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm Kathy Converse. I've been with the group about 30 years now, and I currently serve as your president. If you're new here, our day will be enriched by your presence. We look forward to the opportunity to get to know you better. Prairie is a warm and open community where we all come with, anyone who comes with an open mind and a kind heart is welcome. We honor the richness and the diversity that brings to our fellowship differences in age, abilities, ethnicity, gender expression, family structure, political opinion, and religious beliefs. The world has changed, Madison has changed, and the demands being placed on our family structures and lifestyles have changed. Prairie is a place where we can come to refuel, to learn more about being in a relationship together, how to listen, how to forgive, how to foster trust and compassion in one another, and how to live more socially just lives. Our services are led by our minister, Matt Aspen, members of the Prairie community or the community at large. Today, we're going to be listening to people that are taking care of that. Anyone who is unfamiliar with General Assembly, it's the annual meeting of the Unitarian Universalist Society and churches, and this year, luckily, because of the pandemic, actually made it easier because a lot of people could attend virtually, and I did attend 5 days virtually, and so it's wonderful to have that option because so many smaller churches in particular can't send delegates, and I was a voting delegate for Prairie. Reverend Matt Aspen had attended the General Assembly in Portland this year, and he had suggested showing this service to the program committee. And his comment was, "The closing worship was beyond uplifting and pretty much nailed most of all the things UUs are needing to hear in this moment of history." We have a few announcements. Next week is our annual joint service with the Sauk Prairie Free Congregation. They are hosting at their building in Sauk City, so we won't be meeting here at Prairie next week. There is a potluck planned that will be after the service there. And many of us have gone in years past, and it's usually outside and tables, and it's quite nice. And we will have people from Prairie speaking at that service. Reverend Matt is currently away, and I'm covering for him. So if you have anything you want to talk to Matt about, if you would come through me first, if you can. If not, we understand. I think it's okay. So the chalice lighting is presented by the family of Ami Michaela Ayayara and Reverend Joseph Santos Leons. The Reverend Joseph Santos Leons is a biracial Chinese and Czech writer, organizer, and community minister. He is based in Metro Manila, the Philippines.
Mapagpalayang umaga sa lahat, a liberating morning to us all. I'm Amy Santos Lyons. I was leaning into the UU faith as I met Joseph and happily found out that there was a congregation in the Philippines where I was raised.
And I'm Joseph Santos Lyons, and I was raised in the Unitarian Universalist Church.
I'm Micaela. I am being raised UU in the Philippines, but there are no churches nearby that we can go to.
I'm Yara. I am Unitarian Universalist, but I'm not religious.
We are a diverse Unitarian Universalist family, each one on a different pathway, crisscrossing, diverging, converging, and reemerging. Each of us building our own local communities, organizing with our own people, trading notes, learning lessons, giving and receiving support, ultimately weaving and widening our beautiful circles of community.
We are surviving. And the last 2 years have been rough. We are reminded there is not one story of the pandemic. Our family was locked down in the Philippines under the police state instituted by the murderous, fascist, and incompetent President Duterte, who has now been replaced by the fascist and incompetent son of the dictator, Marcos Jr.
In those last 2 years, we lost one of my mother's best friends, Tita Susan Kimpo.
My dad's longtime co-conspirator in the UU church, Alandria
We didn't have the energy to think about community organizing.
We went through multiple shocks on top of shocks, the meaning of life blurred, and we grasped from our new home in Manila.
The pandemic revealed the hard truths of our society. The brutal structural and economic inequalities. Arundhati Roy called the lockdown a great chemical experiment that suddenly illuminated hidden things. While wealthy and middle-class communities enclosed themselves in gated colonies with access to deliveries, working class and poor people experienced the inhumanity of our broken healthcare system.
We felt uncertainty and scarcity. We experienced rich countries in the West hoarding vaccines and medical knowledge. We struggled with misinformation and vaccine hesitancy. We were overwhelmed with calls for mutual aid, the needs of our own children and family, the tending to sick loved ones, and long periods of isolation and lockdown.
When all else fails, when all feels lost, there is a fellowship. Kindred spirits who are with you on your journey, however terrible. To find and be found with other people, giving what you can, taking what you need, there is a beauty there. For we remember that the first sign of human community was the mending of a broken bone.
When all the odds are not in our favor, and when the powerful act with impunity, there is always refuge, a sanctuary, a place to gather our strength, to be among the people who share our lives and who move towards the same horizon, community. A metaphorical place to soak our weary bones and body, and let its waters replenish you. When hope was seemingly lost, I often reminded myself that I am a Unitarian Universalist. We stand witness to the broken world, to the vulnerable, and to the voiceless. Gathering strangers and helping build a family, build community, build hope and power.
Community is ever evolving and can take many shapes.
Sometimes community is my barcada of friends, or it's a book club my father organized with religious professionals of color, or it's my mother convening the neighbors to make signs for protests.
In an increasingly complex and socially distancing and unjust world, we try many ways to find each other and offer solidarity, strategy, and support.
Ultimately, weaving and widening our beloved communities.
Together we light this chalice.
Our opening music is Singing the Lizard Tradition, the Gray Book, number 101, Abide With Me. Pause to listen for the spoken word interludes between each verse. Stand as you're willing and able.
Sickness, grandmother's witness is with us in liminal spaces, feeling so breathless. Death is an exhale, inhale with us. New life cuts through strife like a knife, and somehow we take it in, moving for the win, shaping change, and endings begin. You are a holy friend.
Thank you, Nancy and John. We'll now have a moment of silent meditation. The next selection is a sermon by Reverend Gretchen Haley titled, The Deal on Those Days. She's a senior minister at Foothills Unitarian in Fort Collins, Colorado. She's described as relentlessly curious about most things, especially the big stuff of theology, the magic of collaboration, and the great joy of pop culture. She has an audacious ambition for the liberal church, believing in its capacity to transform lives and our world by way of hyper-local relationships and partnerships that inspire the unleashing of courageous love.
It was March 2020. You know the week. I'm sitting in my home office, and just a few feet away from me, my two teenagers are in the living room homeschooling. And a few feet away from them, my partner's at the kitchen table. It is her turn to supervise. Every dividing line that I have carefully practiced in my ministry up until this moment, boundaries that keep my family in one world and my church and work in another, have come undone. Just like everything else I've come to know about what it means to be a minister and do church, all in a matter of days. A pit starts forming in my stomach, and the tears in my eyes feel just a breath away as my body readies itself for grief. I listen to and read every news story I can find as if tea leaves for the future that we will all soon face. With every headline, my stomach grows tighter, and I write letters, and then I make videos to the people in my church and in my family, who, especially those people who in this new world are required to acquiesce, whether they believe it or not, they are technically over 65 and at risk. For no practical reason at all, I decide I should call Lynn. In the congregation that Sean and I serve, that is the Foothills Unitarian Church in Fort Collins, Colorado, Lynn is one of our elders. Literally, in this case, she's 88. There she is. She's on the left. She's next to two other beloved elders, Bob and Bev. Lynn has been in our congregation for over 50 years. I don't know exactly why I decided to call Lynn, but I just know I need to hear her voice. Lynn is one of many partners I end up calling in those days. I mean, I obviously also call Sean a lot. And then I call Sue and Sarah and Scott and Nancy and Arpy and Johanna and Glenn and Mary and Terry. I could keep going and going and going with my list of names. Who's on your list? Those people you called on in those days and who call on you. I invite you to just share a few names right now into the space or into the chat. Those partners who you count on. In those days, there was this whole web of checking in just called into being. And in every hello, the tender awareness of feeling way too little, like our story. And in every how are you, the humble surrender of not having any freaking idea about any plans. Except also there was this trust, this automatic response into a steady practice of turning to each other, our partners, who were at least company in the chaos, even though none of us knew when or if the storm would pass. It is, after all, the call that saves us. And the checking in on each other that connects us with something greater, that love that abides. The voice on the other end that says simply yet powerfully, we are still here. We survived. In those days when we had no idea what it would mean for us to do church, at least not as we had known it for decades or even centuries. In those days, we knew most clearly how to be the church. We knew to make the calls, we knew to give the money, and we knew to show up in ways that were for more than just ourselves. We also knew we'd need to learn things we'd never known and really never wanted to know. We also knew that we'd have to be okay with being uncomfortable, maybe for a long time. The only good news was that at least it would be over by the following May, when the UUA promised that we could get back to normal. Just kidding, Susan. Mostly. Said May. Most of all, in that total disorientation, we knew we needed help, not just from within, but also beyond our congregations. The covenant among our churches was never more alive than in those days, as lay folks and professionals and UUA staff and community ministers and partners in our community, especially the disabled community who had so much to teach us in this time, all of us were in on an ongoing conversation where no one had all the plans, everyone felt too little, and yet we knew we had a big thing worth doing and our partners are counting on us, and so we could not give up. In those days, we knew instinctively how to be the church, and even more, we knew most clearly why it matters that we are the church. Not perfectly, of course. I had an idea, actually, for a GA workshop where we all could just share our most embarrassing tech messes. That'd be fun, right? For us, I'm pretty sure we'd have to tell about this last Christmas Eve, when literally the feed, it just for some reason that night, it decided it would not load. And then it loaded, and then there was no sound. And then, oh, right, I actually can't even tell you about it because I wasn't there because my family had a COVID exposure 2 days before. Yeah, it was horrible. But in sharing our stories, we would, and we all have our stories, right? But in sharing our stories, we'd remember that neither tech nor perfection are the point. The people are the point. And the partnership with each other and with God, that's something greater. And the deal we make to keep trying, that's the point. And we did it. We are here. We are here. And we survived. Since I started seminary in 2007, article after article and lecture after lecture has described the institutional and the local church in every way opposite of how I have just described it. I have heard constantly of the church's imminent demise, the death of Sunday school, and/or our inevitable implosion and/or slow drift into oblivion. In seminary, we learned that millennials thought we were irrelevant. Boomers would soon be focusing on their retirement vacations. And the silent generation were aging out out of the heaviest volunteer lifting that we'd relied on them for so long. Now, you may have noticed that in addition to Gen Zers who weren't yet constituted, they left out one generation in this analysis. Which, in my opinion, was a miscalculation, given how many of us Gen Xers are now holding lay and professional leadership in our congregations. To quote Nirvana, "Oh well, whatever, never mind." My point is, long before the pandemic came along, our beloved local congregations, this institution to which many of us have dedicated countless hours, if not our whole lives, have needed what Diana Butler Bass has described as a major reorientation if, quote, we are going to remain relevant in this new world. Long before the pandemic, our families and children were not showing up consistently or at all, and yet needed ministry more than ever. Already before the pandemic, giving was changing as younger generations had fewer resources and really didn't get this whole idea of pledging anyway. Already we needed to be fully and fluidly present both online and in person, even though we really had no idea what this even meant. And already, our churches were some of the least progressive, most monocultural, white, hetero spaces that many young people will encounter in their whole lives, despite the story many of us tell ourselves or the call that most of us know our faith makes. Long before the pandemic came, our congregations already needed to change. And they were already at risk. I don't mean, though, at risk of closing, especially those of you in our smaller congregations. You're kind of like that tiny mint plant that I planted in my backyard. It just survives even the heaviest snows. But more, I mean that we were already at risk of forgetting that why that was so clear to us in those early days of the pandemic, and that were also so clear to us in the early days after Trump's election, or in the early days after 9/11, or after George Floyd was murdered, or after the floods took everything, or on any of those days when the bottom drops out from the middle of our lives and we know we cannot do it alone. In those days, the why of church surrounds us and scares us and soothes us all at once as we feel seen and found and held and charged as if for the very first time. This feeling, this ministry is the promise of the local Unitarian Universalist Church with the not radical, still radical idea that we are all in this life together at its center. And when the crisis comes, we know this promise so well. We feel its urgency and its call, and we instinctively say yes. It's just on the other days, when the crisis fades and we are back in ordinary times, we all too often forget. Or what's more true is that we have our hearts broken enough times that we choose to forget. As Sean said, churches are human enterprises. And to give yourself to a Unitarian Universalist congregation is to say yes to disappointment, or worse. And so we lose faith, we get tired, we stop going, or we keep going resentfully. We shrink our dreams, or grow bitter, or numb, or all of the above, especially in these days. Just a couple of months ago, some of our dearest congregants came to me to say they were feeling disconnected from the church. It wasn't a complaint. It was more like a confession. These are our past board members, our most generous donors. Just a few years ago, they could not have imagined their lives without our congregation. And yet here they were, feeling like they just weren't sure about any of it anymore. And they aren't alone. In the intervening days and weeks and what felt like decades between early 2020 and mid-2022, a lot of us have become familiar with this sense of disconnection. Not just because of the pandemic, with its polarization and politicization and that pit in our stomach that we never had time to tend to, but also because of the rise of white supremacy and fascism as it replied to what many of us believed was progress in creating a truly multicultural, multiracial democracy. And then alongside that, the climate crisis has come in close, which in my area now means we have wildfires in December, and in yours might mean still trying to recover from the last storm when the next one comes. The combination of all of these collective forces constitute for us a moral injury. A trauma. And yet we are pushed to keep going. We push ourselves to keep going, get back to work, even while death and extinction surround us and threaten us daily. We are encouraged to return to normal as if the last 2.5 years were like a blip in a Marvel movie. We have survived. And also, we are not the same. Whatever notions we had of the world being finished, or at least on its way, have come undone. Whatever notions we had of we being the ones to finish it have come undone. In so many ways, our churches, our association, the institutions around us have come undone. There is so much work to do, so much ministry needed, and we are so small. So tired and so in need of ministry ourselves. Is it finished yet? Can I tell you something? When our president invited me to preach this service, just like Pastor Jacqueline Duhart told us was her first reaction, my first reaction was also, no way. Obviously, I did get to the second reaction, which was, oh God, I'm doing this. But that first reaction was real, and it was rooted both in my terror and equally my confusion about what it means to be here with all of you at General Assembly. Now, to be clear, over the years I've loved much at GA. I have cried and laughed and sung with joy in the rare and powerful experience of being with thousands of other UUs while we are reminded both of who we are and who we are yet called to be. And still, I have also always felt confused about what it means to do Unitarian Universalism in general. Because where Unitarian Universalism has meaning for me is in the particular, in the people and the partners and the stories, even the particular annoyances and frustrations and heartbreak, most of all in the particular repair and the change. Unitarian Universalism comes alive by way of a localized, particular covenant grounded in place, where hearts can be opened and mindsets can shift over years of often hard and even painful ministry to and with the imperfect people who keep showing up. It is like this little button that one of our congregants gave me a few years ago. It said in big letters, "I love people." And then in little letters underneath that, it said, "In theory." The grand ideals of Unitarian Universalism that inspire so many of us to travel across the country or to log on in the middle of our busy lives, this is us loving people. In theory. Here we can connect with the good news of our faith that brought so many of us to our churches in the first place, and yet keep the promise at arm's length, set in bold generalities and sweeping statements of conscience that may or may not have real meaning back in our hometowns and home churches. Which again, this is not unimportant, and after all we have been through, keeping our faith at arm's length is understandable. It's just this. All of this is not the deal we make as Unitarian Universalists. Our deal is not to love people in theory. Our deal is to love them in real life. Our deal is to keep calling that web of check-ins into being, not just when we're feeling the gift of being in this life together, but in the gut punch. In the times when we most feel like everyone around us isn't doing enough or doing it wrong, when it feels like the only best option is to forget, right then, by which I mean, of course, right now, our faith invites us to remember how urgently it matters that we show up and be the church, not just for the rest of the world, but for ourselves. Not just for ourselves, but for that something greater. Because without the people being the church, there is no church. And without the local church, there is no Unitarian Universalism. Which means the most important part of our General Assembly is the way it inspires us to return to our very specific assemblies, our congregations, virtual and IRL, how we will take the inspiration and energy of our theoretical and theological commitments and connect them with the very real life why that we know so well when the crisis hits, and how we stitch all of this onto our hearts so that it pulses with urgency even on the ordinary days or in the days when bitterness is everywhere. In these days, we are called not just to go back to church, but to be the church, and to invite our friends and neighbors to join us as partners, because so much has been lost and so much has come undone, which also means that it must be time to build. It must be time to take all the lessons of who we knew to be in early 2020 and let them inform and drive a new vision where we can meet the no less urgent needs of June 2022 and beyond. I want to offer four examples of this vision. First, in the early pandemic, we loved getting to share Sundays with other UU communities, didn't we? Yeah, it was fun. It's also such a time saver to share ideas and practices so fluidly. And so, rather than just reverting back to old silos in this moment, how about we take this moment to build a movement where collaboration is the norm? Because it is possible we don't actually need 1,000 separate membership committees. Or 1,000 different stewardship committees. Or 1,000 different online services every single Sunday. Example two. In the early pandemic, we knew how critical our local congregations are, how essential they are. And so maybe in our new collaboration, we will build new congregations or plant new campuses, especially in communities hardest hit by COVID, or farthest away from abortion access, or in states currently criminalizing gender-affirming care for our children. How many ministries would we be starting if we decided our congregations matter at least as much as NPR? Or Planned Parenthood? And don't they? Or really, maybe our partnerships will lead us to pay more attention to the UU churches that are already in these communities and follow their lead. I mean, just imagine saying from within your church, dear UU churches in Arkansas and Alabama and Louisiana and Missouri and Wyoming. Now, I know Wyoming pretty well. It's very close to Colorado, so let me pause here to be very specific. Imagine saying from within your congregation, dear friends in Casper and Cheyenne and Laramie, Wyoming, we know that Unitarian Universalism is urgently needed in your communities, and we believe your churches are the best way for our faith to be made real. Thank you for your work on reproductive justice and trans inclusion. Here's some money. Do with it what you need to grow your church. We are praying for you. We are here for you because we are partners, all of us, and we can't give up on this big thing, this deal we make to love people in real life. And yes, that is the Reverend Leslie Key, who serves both in Casper and Laramie, Wyoming. This photo is of her at the abortion clinic that she and her church are starting to help start in Casper right now as a way of fighting the trigger laws in her state. Speaking of money, my third example. Early in the pandemic, we knew that quarantine impacted people differently. Some people lost jobs, some people couldn't get out of their homes, some people were totally fine. And the generosity that I saw during that time was phenomenal in our churches. Suddenly, it's like we understood that giving in our churches could be a radical act of equality and social justice. Or at least it can be when we meet our big dreams with big giving. But this is not the conversation happening in most of our churches right now. We are not talking about building a vision with big dreams. We're talking about cutting it, pulling back on ministry because people have pulled back. But if we are even going to approximate that vision that we have now stitched upon our hearts, then we are going to need to stop spending hours in budget meetings talking about how we can find $200 or even $2,000. We cannot wait for the church to meet the longing we have and then give. It is our giving that makes that longing a reality. Which brings me to my fourth and final example. In the crisis of 2020, what was clear more than anything was that there are a million places where people today can get great content. What people need more than anything now is great belonging. And the good news that we remembered in 2020 is that this is literally what Unitarian Universalists most have to offer. Our part of finishing the world is the practice of relationships, transformational relationships, accountable relationships, steadfast relationships. And so as we build, let's build up the practices of covenant that help us love each other in real life. Let's learn and teach a different way of checking in with each other. Not just with the people that we already know or who are like us, but beyond that, to ask ourselves who we haven't called, haven't considered, aren't yet in relationship with. And where checking in includes not just offering comfort, but also telling the truth in all its complexities and contradictions, where it includes uncovering where we have failed each other and ourselves. And it includes asking for help and receiving help and praying together, healing, which it sounds sweet, like, let's heal. But actually, it's really hard and painful. But this is what our covenant actually requires. The hard work of healing in real life, repair, reconciliation, and recovery. In these days of disruption and destruction, we must give thanks that we survived. Our individual and collective survival, it is a miracle. And survival is too small a dream for our big faith. On these days, we must build a bigger dream for our world and for ourselves. We must remember the deal we make as Unitarian Universalists, group by group, congregation by congregation, partner by partner, in these little rooms and these sacred promises. We are big enough. And besides, our partners are counting on us, so we can't give up. Let's keep on finishing the world. Amen.
Sorry. Okay, we're just going to take another moment to meditate a little bit and think about what we've heard, all of these things that we've heard, before we have a few comments. We have a little bit of time for discussion around the focus of today's service. If there's anyone that would like to speak, and if you can, come up to the mic. If not, signal and Nancy will bring a mic to you. I think she gave us a lot to think about.
Well, I just wanted to mention that collaboration was one of the things she talked about, and that's something that we're actually going to talk about next week at SOC, is ways that our two groups might be able to collaborate in any type of way, and that's something that would be great for people to think about.
So I've been thinking about some of these things quite a bit. Our shared trauma, I think, with humans in general, lends towards tribalism. And I spent some time with friend of mine who we separated during on Facebook because she's a Trump follower and a big conservative. She also happens to be a really lovely, caring person. And it was nice to reconnect with her this week at University of Wisconsin band camp. She was a camp counselor. And I would like to encourage everyone to try to reach across the political divide if you can.
I think many of us are practicing that within our families. Orange?
To follow up on what John just said, I heard a really interesting speaker this week who was born in Nepal and came to the United States at age 15 because she was considered a gifted student. And she's working at the University of Wisconsin now in climate change and environmental activism among indigenous and religious groups. And she said that one of the things that they have learned in their work here is that you need to meet people where they are. So, for instance, she said that really interfaith approaches don't work because everybody's starting somewhere different, but that they found, for example, that the evangelical Christians are very active when there is a natural disaster, and they don't want some environmentalist to come in and talk to them about creationism. So their group instead comes in and says, we really admire what you do when there's a natural disaster. It's great that you're there for people, that you're so helpful. There may be some ways that we can mitigate natural disasters, have few of them or have them not be as bad. Let's talk about that. And I think that that's sort of an inspiration for meeting people where they are and starting those tough conversations. If anyone is interested, I have the PowerPoint presentation because she couldn't get it to work, so she emailed it to us later, so I'd be happy to share it.
Any other comments? We're sharing our offering this quarter with Wilma's Fund, which provides assessments and assistance to LGBTQ people who are experiencing homelessness, as well as support to prevent homelessness in this population. We're going to hear John again, Blues in F, Low Horn Etude by Ricardo Mato-Sinhos. And we're very fortunate to have this star here today.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Well, we haven't been recording, so we're not closing the recording, but at this time, if there are any joys or sorrows that people want to share with the community, or if there's anyone who's visiting that would like to say hello and say what brought you here, and I don't know if I see any visitors, but you can certainly stay. There is more love somewhere, and there's going to be sing verse 1-2, there's going to be a little interlude with the video, and then voice verse 4. So 1-2, interlude 4. And then the closing words will come from Reverend Gretchen Haley right after the closing music.
Just let it overflow in yourself. So much so that, as Brother David Stendhal Ross says, you cannot help but rise in body or in spirit and burst out with song.
There is more love. We're going to sing that verse again. There is more love somewhere. There is more hope.
The work ahead is not small, and there will be many days where we feel we are too little. On those days, remember, you are big enough, and you are not alone. Partners are everywhere, and we are counting on you. So let us go and be the church, be a blessing, and keep on finishing the world. Our worship time has ended. Our service just begins. Go in peace and in joy. Amen.
As they're applauding, I'd like to take a minute to thank Nancy and John and Rachel and Martin for cutting and pasting and putting this together.